Located in Unit 201 at 1109 Henderson Highway, Planet of Sound is 100% Manitoba-owned and proudly independent, your top-notch source for new and used music, video games, and movies. With more than 16 years in the business, Planet of Sound specializes in helping you find that special item to round out your collection. Open Monday through Friday from noon until 8 p.m., Saturdays from 11 until 6 p.m. Visit Planet of Sound today and check out our large assortment of compact discs, vinyl, DVDs, Blu-rays, video games, apparel, collectibles, and more. Planet of Sound, Unit 201 at 1109 Henderson Highway. Purveyors of great music and good times since the year 2000.
Great neighborhoods are built one gathering at a time. On Saturday, September 12th, the annual Neighbor by Neighbor Music Festival returns to the Lord Roberts Community Center for a full day of live music, local food, and community celebration. Browse the farmer's market, grab a bite from local food vendors, relax in the beer garden, enjoy family activities, and catch an incredible lineup featuring We're Only Here for the Snacks, Shay Wolf, Paige Drobot, Odie Beresford, Tyler Delpino and the Brastronauts, Mise en Scene, El Leon and the Strangers, and more. Whether you're coming for the music, the market, or just to spend the day with your neighbors, this is what community sounds like. Don't miss the Neighbor by Neighbor Music Festival Saturday, September 12th at the Lord Roberts Community Center. Admission is free. Learn more at lordrobertscc.ca. Proudly supported by UMFM 101.5.
Follow us on Instagram at NeighborXNeighbor to get all the up-to-date information on this year's festival.
Good evening and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba.
Our guest this evening is Takashi Iwasaki, Japanese multimedia artist working with such media as painting, drawing, collage, printmaking, wood, and embroidery. Takashi moved to Winnipeg a number of years ago to study English and fine arts at the University of Manitoba, graduating with an honors fine arts degree, and has made Winnipeg his home. He has developed a unique signature style, shown work in numerous places, solo and group exhibitions in various Canadian cities, the U.S., Taiwan, France, Japan, and India. He has received awards from such competitions as the Bank of Montreal First Art and the Helga Miller Scholarship of Canada, and been interviewed and featured in many publications such as Border Crossings Art Magazine, CBC News, Galleries West Magazine, Textile Plus Magazine in the Netherlands, and Embroidery Magazine in the UK. Takashi recently had an exhibition at Plug-In Institute of Contemporary Art here in Winnipeg, highlighting his vibrant, playful, and alluring artwork. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you, Susan.
Your vibrant artwork tells many creative stories in a range of media. Can you share some of your early memories of your enthusiasm for art and growing up in Japan?
I think as a child, I was more attuned to design, graphic design, and maybe products, because that's one of the things I found out after moving to Canada. In Japanese household, unless it's a very artistic art household, which wasn't mine, I think the best art-related thing you could come across is maybe like posters. If you're a movie lover, it's posters on the wall, or lots of houses have calendars with pictures. But those were the things I knew as some sort of design slash art-related things. And when I moved to Canada, I was surprised. A lot of friends' houses, not particularly artistic friends' houses, they sometimes have like, oh, my aunt painted this, or my local artist friend did this, and they have original pieces. But that was my influence. And I always looked at, oh, such a beautiful wrapping for a gift. In Japan, wrapping gift is such a thing that even my minor gifts are wrapped very beautifully, and packaging is gorgeous. And that's what art meant to me when I was a child. and origami and coloring books and all that, those childhood things. That's my basic starting of what art was to me.
Would you like to speak more about your training in art, your University of Manitoba degree, and how you've developed your unique signature style?
I'll go a little before that. Any school requires some sort of portfolio. So for applying to the U of M, I did lots of sketches. They were rather representational. Back then, I didn't think of abstract was something I would like to do. And I always thought of doing representational things as I saw. I was pretty good at, I think I would say, for drawing portraits to depict the likeness of the person. And I loved mechanical things. So I always liked straight buildings or small mechanics, some sort of machines. That was something I was always interested in. But at some point I thought, oh, whenever I do those drawings or paintings, finished paintings in my head, built already with color and sometimes even with textures, like, why am I replicating everything I see already just for other people to see? So that, I think, made me think differently. Oh, what if Jackson Pollock is not something similar to what I do, but he had a very drastically different idea of what I used to do. And, oh, it could be much freer than this confined sort of what I see is what I depict. Then I think that changed, let me be a little bit looser in my painting or drawing. I just figured out by what shape do I like? What does this shape look like? Or if it looks like fruit to me, maybe it could look something else for other people. And possibility of freer, less restricted representation of what it could be became more and more interesting. And I think that's what's driving me for the past 10 years or so.
Do you have particular themes or stories that you incorporate into your work, or where do your ideas and inspiration come from?
Often from botanical themes, because I think I know what I'm looking at. But when I read about these plants, I'm always baffled. I thought this was a leaf, but it's not a leaf. It's scientifically different names, or petals looking like petals. They were not petals. Sometimes those are deformed thorns of some sort. And I like thinking I'm understanding. I think the viewer probably has something similar of my work too, because I work like that. They might see something, but sometimes it's a phallic symbol. I intentionally sometimes put those things and things not comfortably talked about in public, because I think that's one of those things art is interesting to me, because sometimes it's forbidden, but it's discreetly depicted or spoken in poetry, you know, theater. Not everything is so obvious. So I try to put something funny or quirky and imagine what other people could think. That's, I think, my joy as well. So botanical is one of the things, and something outer space. I think we still don't know a lot, or underwater, deep, deep underwater, people can't reach. I hear stories, or I read stories about scientific discoveries, but I'm just processing in a sort of more like a entertainment ground for me. I don't really know what it is, but I try to digest it in a way that it's memorable for me. So sometimes when I look at my work, I go back to the time I made the piece. It's like listening to retro music you grew up in. When you listen to it, you can see in colors, oh, I was with my friends and doing this and I made this mistake. I was romantic. Sometimes that happens to me when I look back at my older pieces. Oh yeah, it was this moment. I forgot about that. So it's more of a diary entry for me. Yeah. Those are my inspirations.
What do you hope that your audience will experience and take away when viewing your artwork?
The primary thing for me is positive feelings. something uplifting. That's what I want, because it's easy to be trapped. I think I have these moments too, anxious moments, and something's not going well because of myself or things surrounding me, and I have no control over certain things. But we are still doing fine when you look at on the other side of the coin. And I think I want to emphasize more of that side. And because I think everyone needs the positive thinking, whether you're in the bottom of the despair or rather happy place. I'm not escaping from the reality, but I think just restating that there are things that's joyous in our lives. I was listening to a podcast of some sort of road rage. This person is so good at, he thinks that person might be in a rush, but it's not nice to be in a rush, and erratic driving is not justified. But imagine your mom was dying and you have to be at the hospital, and in the road rage, we don't think that deep enough. And, this person's breaking the rule or cutting me off, and getting mad will cause more problem. So, yeah, that's what I learned from that little tip.
Going back to some exhibitions, would you like to tell us about your recent exhibition at Plug-In ICA and maybe walk us through the process as you prepare for the show?
It was a really beautiful space to begin with. And the staff there is fantastic. Theo and Craig, they know the space and they know what to work with. So everything is very easy to get in for me and out. And Jill, the director at this time, he and Joe, my collaborator, it was a two-person show. And they had been in conversation, and Joe suggested me to be part of the show. And Joe and I have worked together for public pieces in the past, and we knew we would get along. And Jill was very open, and he decided, or suggested at least, let's make it a workshop sort of exhibition. So you both have, Joe and I, will have separate space for a month. And we will be showing something we have created in that month using the exact space of exhibition. So I thought it was a very generous way of letting artists use the space. But they'll have to have it kind of closed for that month we are working in. It's kind of a loss, but I think it will make a really interesting, beautiful story of, this is what artists responded to the space, the way they worked or had a communication with the staff and everyone in the community. And yeah, that worked fantastically.
Can you describe some of the works that you created at the time?
Joe started thinking about stories, because stories usually make us feel connected and we have a goal in the story. So he found this Halcyon story in, I think, Greek mythology, and other cultures too, combined all that. There's some sort of Halcyon related, which is kingfisher bird in some story or cultures. It's associated with that. And Halcyon, kingfisher, brought fire to humanity when the god didn't want the humanity to have it. That's my understanding, though. I might not be so accurate, so don't quote me on it. So Halcyon brought fire to humanity when the god was not aware. And that's why we have fire and other things in our lives. So we thought, fire could be a very nice signifier for this show. And Halcyon, it can fly, it can zoom, it can hunt, and it can be generous to humans. And yeah, some sort of connection of nature and human and other animals and upper level of our realization. That gave us loose but interesting background for this exhibition. So the piece I made with it's a wooden lattice that I made for the show at the very back end of the main wall. And that had the shape of an egg, or it's a tilted oval, which I thought could be an egg of Halcyon. And there's element of sun at the upper area. It's hard to say, hard to see without explaining, but I thought it would be a very nice starting point for me. And Joe also made a piece which has the fire in the middle. It's revolving eternally. It was spun by hand so people could participate in the action of realizing the piece.
You've also been in a number of other solo and group exhibitions in various galleries and countries. Can you share a few details and experiences of maybe some of your most memorable exhibitions over the years?
There was one in Portland, Oregon. I was surprised because I had no contacts with anyone in Portland back then. And apparently the gallery, what's called Motel Gallery, they closed since then. And the owner is onto other entrepreneurship. So it was not that she wanted to drop it or it was so difficult, didn't want to do it. I think people change. And it was, I think, for the positive change, in my knowledge. They had a show with other artists, which is always fun. I often think it's nice to have a group show than a solo show, and especially in a different city that I've never been to. So I get to meet people. And a friend of mine had a friend in Portland. You might know Kevin Kelly. He was a professor at the U of M, and he taught me a lot of things while I was in school and after I finished school. And he had a friend in Portland. So I stayed with them for about a week. They took me to different places and had lunch in Portland, very Portland-like restaurants and places like that. So yeah, that was not only for the show, but I think experience as a whole. And one show in New York also, because before then I might have been to New York, but I didn't have any contacts. There's an artist, Daniel, he came for another opportunity in Winnipeg, maybe 2 or 3 years prior to it. So I got to know him, and he lived in New York. So I got to visit him and stay at his place. I think connections through exhibitions usually make very memorable impressions on me.
You know, how did you get to some of these opportunities?
I think back then, before social media was a thing, maybe like close to 20 years ago, not many artists had a website. But on return trip to Japan, where my parents live, it was in the summer, I think, I didn't have much to do because my parents' town only has 9,000 people. Unless you can drive, there aren't that many activities. And I lost contacts with my old friends after moving from that town to for a college in Osaka in Japan. I had been out of touch with my friends. So I thought, okay, let's make a website. So that helped me a lot. I started to code back then. It was HTML was the basic code. So I got to build my website. And I think that helped a lot. And I often asked, how did you get to know me, know my work? Oh, from your website.
You also have a lot of colorful and exciting murals that may be found around Winnipeg and other cities, such as Churchill and Toronto. Can you tell us a few stories behind these and what you enjoyed most about doing the outdoor public murals?
I had been invited to those. I didn't approach them. Somehow people found what I did. And sometimes one mural I had done was enough for people to call me into their project. And what I enjoyed the most about public artworks in that kind is that people don't have to be committed to spend time in an art gallery. They can be just passerby and doing their things and happen to find it. Depends on the context. It could be a nice message board. It can capture certain elements of the time, of the period. I really like public art opportunities in general. And they're not going to last as much as some people would care for a painting in the house. So impermanency is poetic in a sense.
There's the street art that you did in front of the library. Can you describe this work and tell us a little bit more about it?
the city of Winnipeg was removing buses from that street. There's, like, I think, the pros and cons of debate after it's been done, because some businesses are declining there and lots of businesses pulled out after then. But it was my friend who does street art project. It's called Cool Streets Winnipeg, operated single-handedly by Stefan Dorge. I had worked with him for other projects, and this one was particularly interesting. It was more closer collaboration with the city. But the money came from Bloomberg in the States. They have initiative for street safety and street decoration safety altogether. They applied for that opportunity, and the city of Winnipeg won. So we painted it. But unfortunate thing was, it became really fun when it was made. It was beautiful. But because of the dripping of oil from the bus over the decades, it couldn't be etched out in the scope of our work. I think the city at some point will be repaving. It's going to last only for 2 years, the longest. So because of the oil, which couldn't be etched out or washed out, paint started to peel off. So that's the thing. People started to complain a lot about the peeling after a month. Yeah, that's a little too early for something impermanent. And maybe the timeline of developing something for the pedestrians, because it's a pedestrian street right now. But there's nothing for the pedestrian to do business with after the bus has been gone. And the businesses don't have anything exciting to bring people in yet. So I don't hate it. I like the fact that it's there. But some people want more, I think, profit to be made or more things to happen along with it. So lining up things isn't always easy. Like in a household too. Oh, my kids are coming home from school. My dinner is not ready, or, you know, I have to catch flight, but I haven't fully packed yet. I think it's a common scenario for every household. And if it happens on the city scale, it could be more haphazardous, I guess.
There was also a project you did called Bokeh. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about that artwork in Kildonan Park Pond in Winnipeg? And what was the story behind the making of this one?
It was a collaborative work with Nadi Design, which is a landscape architect company. It was through the city of Winnipeg, and Winnipeg Arts Council was the one to handle all the project timeline and budget. So Nadi Design was looking for someone to work with, and Winnipeg Arts Council suggested they could work with me. So we started having conversation, and it went very smoothly, and we liked each other. So I proposed certain design. It's usually in the public art in most cities. They want something to do with the city itself, identity of the city, the location, and historical connection to what I'm proposing. And the design was based on mid-century floor lamp. It's got a long arch, and counterbalance is made of a block of marble. It's called Arco lamp by an Italian designer. The reason why I chose the mid-century modern furniture as my origin of the design from the 60s is that the building right next to the site is built in that 60s modern design. So I wanted to bring the story to it. So I made the Arco lamp, which only has a huge one glow, but I always like to elaborate and add my things. So it's got three or four globes of different sizes in my design. And I made the colors yellow, orange, and pink. So it stands out and warm in the snow white wintertime. And it doesn't disappear in the greenery. They're more or less complementary colors to the green. So, and with the landscape architect Nadi Design, we decided the placement. They're really good because they've been doing landscaping, so they know where are good locations and how deep things have to be dug in. That's on engineer, but they always know in water areas and where is better place than the other. So, and they did a lot of logistics and communication with fabricators and all that. It's always cumbersome to get into something new. And part of me says, don't do it. It's too much work. But after doing it, it feels so good. Now yeah. I'm more excited to look for other public art opportunities after having things that I've learned from this bouquet opportunity. So I'm so grateful.
Can you tell us about a film that you've created?
It's called Shitty Little. I've been friends with a few filmmakers. I have a filmmaker in my neighborhood also. It's kind of an artsy community in the West End of Winnipeg. But this one, he doesn't live in the West End, but I've been friends with him for a decade or more. His name is Jeff McKay. And he one day said, "Hey, Takashi, I'm thinking of making a short film." And I started to write the poetry. It's about how people abuse the nature and cut down the trees and think nothing of it. It's just, you know, material. Yeah. And consequences are negligible for the most part, and people don't know. So he wrote the poem about this shitty little tree, which is the last one to be cut down, and how we handle our lives in relation to nature. And I like that kind of cynical view on nature and humanity. And we got along on that. So we decided to apply for Canada Council grant, and we got it. Yes. And we rented a space, and it's based on a paper cutout, black paper, more of a shadow play. It looks like shadow play, but it's technically not shadow play, but visually shadow play. And I provided certain animals or characters for ourselves to move. So it's only two-person production. He's moving some parts that I cut out, and I'm moving at the same time. He's setting up the camera. It's a bit chaotic, but he's really good at editing, which I don't want to do at all. So it worked perfectly. He didn't want to make props. He had a great idea I liked, and I didn't want to edit anything at all on the film. So yeah, we both enjoyed, and we always longed for, I think once or twice a week, time to hang out. It's more for the opportunity to hang out than make work. Yeah, that was beautiful. And we are still thinking of making something new in the coming year. So maybe I'll let you know.
That would be nice. Can you tell us about the wooden Kumiko work entitled Hinode for Bunka Center in Alberta?
That was a public call for submission for artists from the city of Winnipeg. A person I had a contact in Calgary sent me a message saying, "Hey, Takashi, I found this opportunity. What do you think?" And, oh, that's so good. It was a building being built in Lethbridge. It was a Japanese cultural center, which could accommodate non-Japanese people, of course. But that was a good convincing connection. I'm from Japan, and I love promoting Japanese culture. So what I proposed was, it's a traditional Japanese joinery, lots of half-lap joinery. And the kumiko means connected pieces. Yeah, so you have to cut a lot of small pieces, or rather intricate, precise combinations of wood interlocking in a certain way. That's what I proposed. And any public art project, you have to submit and expect you're not going to get it. But luckily, I got this one. So I planned and fabrication. I had a friend who had a company. They design furniture or design house entirely in build. Their company's name is Design Build. They're still around, but they just changed their location. So it's not the facility I worked in, but the principal is my friend. And I said, "I need a space for this big piece. I can't do it at home. And I know you have a big space. Can I use your space after your business hours?" And he said, he's so great. Clayton said, "Yeah, sure. You come in and work after the hours. I had most of the tools, but what they have is also nice for me to be able to use. So that worked very well. And towards the end of the production, it's the typical artist story. Oh, I'm running out of time. So I started to intrude their daytime business hours, and they were okay. I got to meet their staff there, and they were so wonderful, of course, because they do woodworking. Every woodworker is a great person, in my opinion. So I got to know them, and I was able to ship it. And Joe, who I had a collaboration with for the plugin, he even helped me ways to think of hanging in the space in Bunka Center. And he and I drove together there, and he helped me. He's really good at maneuvering scissor lift. So it was a really tight space, and he took the lead and hoisted up for me, and we drilled things together, and it was a bunch of headaches, but it was fun.
Do you have any current or upcoming exhibitions or projects that you'd like to share with our audience?
One year from now, November of 2026, there is a newish gallery on 226 Main Street. I have a booking there for 2 weeks in November 2026.
Do you have any ideas for what you might choose to exhibit?
Mixture of many different things. I've been into interior or whole piece space, environment as art. So maybe a cozy spot you can sit in and have cookie and tea kind of place.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for taking the time to share your story and valuable insight with our audience. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and we wish you continued success.
Thank you so much.
I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.
C for combat, J for jungle, U for uranium, M for mutant. Hey, hey, hey!
CJUM 101.5, campus and community radio with a great sense of urgency. Hey, hey, hey.
Hey there, the Sandwich King of South St. Vitale is taking the summer off. Until he returns, here's a classic episode of Dagwood Radio to cure what ails you.
Breath. So forgive me.